Thank you, Mr. Crystal, and good afternoon to everyone on this chilly, are we in May? I guess that's the way it is in Missouri. You just don't know exactly what you're going to get, but I'd rather have the cooler weather than the hot weather. So, well, some individuals asked me before, are you the first split sermon or the second? I said, definitely the first. That way I can go short and he can go long. He can take all the time. Well, in our dining room, we've had up on the wall for a couple of years now, we have a chalkboard, kind of a decorative chalkboard, but you can write different things and have different focuses maybe for your family. It's what we try to implement sometimes, and you know, sometimes for a whole month it may be something on relating to manners or a different term to learn, and we try to implement it in the dinner table and try to use this word that we have put up on the chalkboard. And this week, the word that Katie posted, now this is kind of at random, so I don't know where she gets these words at exactly. I think there's a book of hard-to-understand words or words you don't use very often. But the word that was posted this past week on the chalkboard was equable. Not equitable, but equable. Now, who all uses this in their daily vocabulary a lot? Equable? Okay, it's E-Q-U-A-B-L-E, and I can't remember using that word. If you all have, more power to you. But the word means of a person who is not easily disturbed or angered, calm and even-tempered, composed, collected, cool, calm, collected, relaxed, easygoing, cool as a cucumber, kind of even-keeled. So emotions that are not like the song Ain't No Mountain High Enough and Ain't No Valley Low Enough. You know, it's not like the emotions are going up and now it's kind of even keeled and just, not easily angered, gentle in nature. That means if your neighbor mows your yard really short and comes over into your side of the yard and mows it real short, even though you keep it really long or high, it doesn't bother you. Doesn't make you want to go in their yard and make a smiley face in their backyard. It doesn't bother you in that way. It wouldn't get under your skin. And that hasn't happened to me over the past 3 days. The four days ago it did happen. But you know, certain things are going to maybe bother us at times, or test us whether I'm equable or not. Am I even keeled or not? Am I calm with this? Am I going to get a rise out of an agitation? How would I respond? You know, my JV basketball coach could be described as someone who is not equable, and if he felt the call was wrong, he was going to be very animated. If he thought you were playing horribly, then he would be very animated too. I just remember him as whenever the reffing in his mind got really bad, he would take his tie and hang it like a noose, and he'd do, "You're killing me! You're killing me!" And he just was not a very equable person in general. I'll get that tie back straight. I had to give you the visual there. But, you know, sometimes it can be very challenging to respond and be an equable person, especially when someone maybe is trying to irritate you or trying to provoke you. I believe that we live in a society where there's almost a desire to see if we can get under that person's skin, see if we can agitate, which we know that's not, you know, one, we shouldn't be easily provoked, but we don't want to be the one provoking either. And that's an attribute that Satan definitely tries to encourage others to do. But it can be challenging to respond in the right way, living in a society where it's seemingly, how much can this person take? I know there's even a video of things that says, if you're not irritated by this, then you have a problem. You know, so this video of people tearing off paper towels where the perforated edges is, and it leaves a little corner. You know, it's like, oh, that's really annoying. Or cutting an apple into odd, not symmetrical slices. There's just things to try to agitate. And was thinking, well, that's kind of the world we live in a way. You know, what can this person take? Can he overcome it or not? Another example would be in high school playing basketball. There seemed to be one or two individuals that would try to quote unquote trash talk or try to get under your skin, try to agitate you, see if they could disrupt you, get into your head. And so this is a type of world that we live in. So that makes it difficult to sometimes respond in an equitable way. Another reason that it makes it difficult is because we also, not only do we maybe live in a provoking society, but we live in a rather harsh society, which is if someone is provoking you, then you have the right, you have the green light to get mad. You have the green light to retaliate. You have the green light to be frustrated. You know, that's what's due to them. They are due something in retaliation. It would be in their court to do so. So some, you know, they don't even know that they are following the prince of the power of the air. They just are responding with, you know, I've been agitated, I've been provoked, therefore I have the right to respond in a certain way. Our neighborhood, we have a HOA Facebook page, and we can post things about, it's supposed to be very good in nature. You post things about a cleanup that's going on in the neighborhood. You hear comments about how other people's dogs are barking at 11 o'clock in the morning. Please shut them up. Really nice things, you know, like everybody would anticipate. But one individual had a particular rant. It got on there, and normally it is really positive, encouraging posts. But I guess somebody had walked their dog and left the dog poop in his yard, and I think he stepped in it. And so he's agitated. He's feeling provoked. And so he goes right to that forum and just this longest rant you could possibly imagine. The point he says, if I catch you all doing this again or whoever it is, you'll be wearing it home with you. It's going on your porch. It's going on your house. The administrator had to respond, and anyways, but he felt he had the right to respond in this particular way. He was irritated. He was provoked. I mean, obviously no one wants to step in that. That would be agitating. But how should we respond? If you want a title for this split sermon, it is Putting on the Gentleness of Christ. Putting on the gentleness of Christ. This is a major part of our calling, is to put on the gentleness of Christ, learning how to respond with gentleness and patience. If we are going to rule with Christ, we must put on Christ and be like Christ, and that means responding in a patient and in a gentle way, even when provoked possibly, or even when irritated. Colossians 3 and verse 12 tells us, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, which includes gentleness, long-suffering, patience. And that's easier said than done. That is one of those easy-to-understand scriptures, very difficult to implement, because we do not live in a society around us that's just very patient, very kind, and very gentle, not a harsh world that surrounds us. It's kind of like if even in the working environment, if somebody makes a mistake, they're going to own up to it. You know, they made a mistake, and so there's going to be consequences and repercussions. And it's not necessarily a teaching moment. It's a moment to really expose an individual who made a mistake. So we don't live in this type of society where it's a gentle response, but rather harsh. What are we told regarding Satan, the devil's tactics, and how to respond? We live around those tactics, but how are we told to respond regarding, or how should we view or be thinking about his tactics? 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. So let's start in verse 6. 1 Peter 5 and verse 6, therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Verse 8, be sober, Be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. So we know that he's going to attack. We know that he's going to provoke, try to agitate. You know, it may be even an insecurity that you have. And then what do you know? Somebody says that exact or tests you in that exact thing that you are insecure about. Well, is it possible that he's influencing that individual to say that particular thing towards you? Is that possible? But yet we're to be aware of this. We're to be sober and to be vigilant. And those two words, sober, implies being mentally alert and self-controlled. If we're to be equable individual, part of that would be being self-controlled in nature, sober-minded, and being able to respond in a gentle and patient way. Vigilant means to be watchful, awake, and alert. So, you know, we do have to have a little bit of an alarm going off in our mind if we think, you know, is it just coincidence that this happened or not? And I mentioned the mowing of the lawn. And, you know, it was kind of interesting is that this other neighbor, he's always mowed it down the line. And for whatever reason, even where that line is, it was the other neighbor that always had the issues with. But for whatever reason, he dropped it sideways, and maybe it was just by accident, I don't know, but it was right where the line is, dropped it super low, where it took a chunk out of his and a chunk out of mine. And that was it. And then his was mowed differently. I thought, is he trying to say I'm mowing on his side? You know, I won't get into the details. I gave him more property though. And so I thought, man, that's really kind of irritating. And I go out and take Jonathan to baseball practice. And I said, you know, that other guy, I'm leaving this alone. The other guy, you know, God's taking care of that one. He used to really take big chunks out. I don't know why. And I'm just leaving it alone. And I get home, the other guy mowed too. It was really bad. Worse than ever. But is that just coincidence? You know, I think we can't be surprised. There has to be some sort of alarm going off at times where you think, that maybe just isn't coincidence. And maybe we're being tested and God's allowing us to be tested in our patience and how we respond. Are we gentle in nature or well, how do we want to react? But, you know, Satan does not want you to react with any sort of wisdom or understanding of his devices. He doesn't want you to be alert of what is going on. He wants you to react. He wants you to respond, and he wants to frustrate you. But what was Christ's advice to the 12 disciples that he sent out, or the apostles that he sent out? Well, react with whatever thing pops in your head, you know, just respond. What was his advice? Matthew 10 and verse 16. Matthew 10 and verse 16. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore be as wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. We were talking about persecutions, and they knew it was coming. And what was his advice to them? Well, you know, just, you know, you don't have any response. You just take whatever's coming to you. No, he says, beware. First he tells them to be wise as serpent, harmless as doves. Beware of them. Verse 18, you will be brought up before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. In verse 23, when they persecute you, as in the city, flee to another. So, you know, if they're not receiving you, if you're being persecuted, withdraw. Flee to another, for surely I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. So be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. Now, serpents have always been a symbol for wisdom, cunningness, cunning behavior, you know, cautious in avoiding danger, a snake would be. No animal really equals the swiftness and skill to escape danger. This seems to be a message that he was giving his disciples. And he was instructing them to be cautious and to be wise as the world would stalk their spiritual lives. He also then directed them to be harmless as a dove. And a dove, you know, just the symbol for innocence and not going to harm anything. I haven't known a dove to swoop down and just take a mouse and fly off or something. Maybe they do that and I don't realize that, but haven't been known. Katie used to have a pet dove. She said it was just the sweetest bird. It would just come up and want to be cuddled and, you know, just come up by your neck and just want to be held like a little baby. And she loved that little dove. It's a very gentle and very loving bird. So part of our calling involves having a wisdom of, you know, the two animals described, wisdom and yet being harmless as a dove and gentle. That's a part of our calling, to partake in a godly wisdom while refraining from participating in a demonic worldly wisdom. If we want to have wisdom, part of that includes being wise about how we respond to things and making sure that we do respond with the gentleness of Christ. James 3 and verse 13. James 3 and verse 13. Talking about the two different types of wisdom. James 3 and verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. The meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. So there's this warring between wisdom that is peaceable, a meekness and a gentleness. And then there's another wisdom, which is demonic, is earthly, it's worldly. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So, you know, there's a stark contrast between the two and the two different types of wisdom. One that's going to have the wisdom to promote peace, to be a peacemaker, to have a gentleness, to have a merciful, and good fruits would come from that, a merciful attitude. It seems like in this world that we live in today, if one has a little bit of power, they're given a little bit of authority, apart from God's wisdom, then look out. You know, the default is going to be a little bit on the selfish side or maybe even rude. Don't know how to handle any power that's given to them. There's a dialogue between a sharp-tongued boss and a dissatisfied employee who is seeking a raise. And the employee who's trying to receive a raise, he tries to tell him how valuable he is to the company, and what you're paying me is really not what I'm worth. So he explains this to the boss, and the boss responds, "Look, you know, I know perfectly well that you're not being paid what you're worth." And the employee is, "So, you know," he is, "but I cannot allow you to starve to death, can I?" So, not a very encouraging response from the guy. So his worth in that boss's mind was he just needed to starve to death. But he can't pay him that, can he? He's just going to pay him whatever he's paying him. But, you know, in the world, sometimes those with the greatest opportunity to help and to lead in a positive way, maybe it's just harshness, not gentleness. It's a biting words that hurt. This world, that's the type of wisdom that seems to be at work. You see more often where you think, "Wow, I can't believe they said that," or "I can't believe they responded in that way." It's not the meekness and the gentleness of Christ. The world, or most of the world's cultures, have reserved their rewards for those who you know, are successful through the strength of their own will and their power to do so. Superior power, in contrast to a meek and gentle person maybe ridiculed for not stepping up. You know, hey, you need to be more aggressive. You just kind of sit in the back and do your work. You need to maybe just do a little more here. So most oftentimes, even in the sales industry, you know, talking to different friends who are in the pharmaceutical sales or dental supply sales, and those, it seemed like some that were the most successful were those that were the most cutthroat and would maybe tell them what they want to hear, which may not have been the truth, or would, you know, kind of slide in behind another salesman, kind of do things that were shady. But yet they were the ones that received the greater reward. But that's this world. That's the God of this world who rewards. But today, frequently, you know, large heads of corporations, and the, you know, they've basically robbed those or stolen secrets or cheated people. You can look at how, I don't know if you've seen the documentary of how Facebook was started, but that's another one of those things. It was kind of a stolen idea, and yet he's the billionaire, Mark Zuckerberg. So it's interesting in business how that works, but, you know, we are not to be that way. There is a gentleness and a meekness and a humility that we should have, which is a bold contradiction from a worldly wisdom that is around us. Now, you know, just to kind of clarify too, one who is meek or gentle shouldn't be confused with someone who is just shy and timid or a personality, or maybe someone who doesn't have a backbone for what's right. It doesn't mean that everyone is to just not stand up or have any boldness or courage about themselves. That's not, you know, being gentle and meekness in that sense. If you think about Jesus Christ and what his nature was like, I mean, he had righteous anger at times. He was very bold and courageous in how he handled things. He was very firm, especially when it came to disrespecting God the Father and the standard for obedience. But yet he is referred to in many places as one who is gentle. But he did use gentleness in instructing the members of the church. So having the gentleness and meekness of Christ does not mean that we somehow lose a standard or don't stand up for what is right. We still at times must remain firm and stay that way. Physical fathers and mothers, you know, they definitely need to be patient with their children, patient and kind and gentle, but yet have a balance of upholding standards. And at times there needs to be firmness. And, you know, even if that's sometimes just the look in the eyes, or they know, okay, that's enough, you know, but they also need the look in the eyes of love, as well. And they need to see that as well too. And not just a look of correction. So they need both, and it needs to be a balance. But no matter what, you know, even if a father or mother are practicing being gentle and being kind, there's still going to be a standard that they will not budge on. There's still certain things you'll never hear a father or a mother say to their child when it comes to standards. One thing that you'll never hear a father or a mother say to their child is, you know, I noticed that all your friends are certain rude and arrogant, and they have this bad attitude. I really like that. You won't hear a father or a mother say that. Or, you know, your mother and I are going away for the weekend. You might consider throwing a party. So that would be another one you won't hear your mother or father say. And this is my favorite. No son of mine is going to live under this roof without an earring. Now go quit your belly aching and go to the mall. Just not going to hear that. So there is going to be a standard that's going to be upheld. But yet there's got to be that love and that care and that gentleness as well. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 1. And here Paul displays a right balance in leading the church of Corinth. First Corinthians 10 and verse 1. Here Paul is displaying a right balance. I'm in 1 Corinthians, and I apologize if I said 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 1. Now I, Paul, myself, am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. So he's first coming to them. This is the preferred, what he's addressing them as. I'm pleading with you in this way, whose presence am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you. But I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with that confidence by which I intend to be bold against some. So I'm coming to you with meekness and gentleness, but if I have to, I'm going to be bold if need be. You know, kind of like saying, don't make me come down there, or I don't want to turn this car around. That's kind of the same. If I have to, I will. But I fear lest somehow, as a serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted by the simplicity that is in Christ. I'm sorry, that is not the right word. Verse 3, I was in 11. For though we walk in the flesh, there we go, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. So the things he's comparing, it is compared against the knowledge of God. And if need be, he's going to be firm. He's going to be bold. He's going to cast down the arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. That is the goal, that every thought is brought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. So regardless of what tactic he was going to use, that was the goal, was that the church members there, that thought would be brought to the obedience of Christ. But he came to them in meekness of Christ and gentleness of Christ. That would be, I guess you might say, the preferred method. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 4. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 4. And he's speaking again of his own conduct and how the gospel message was spread. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 4. But as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, even so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God who tests our hearts. For neither at any time did we use flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak of covetousness, God is witness. Nor, you know, they didn't sugarcoat things and wasn't going to cover things up. Nor did we seek glory from other men, either from you or from others, when we might have made demands as apostles of Christ. And we had the authority to make demands. He didn't do that. He could have, but he didn't. But we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. So even given the opportunity, he could have came in a different way, but yet came with gentleness. Even though he knew what he was saying was in the right, he came with gentleness. So there's a time to be firm, but there's also definitely, and I guess that would be probably more so than anything, and in all that we do, is that we want it to be covered in gentleness in our responses. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 21, one more example here of Paul. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 1, there's a few different times where he responds and says, I'm doing this in a gentle way, or it can be in a different way. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 21. And here Paul is basically asking the church who needed correction, you know, how do you want me to come to you? Call it either way. It's your choice. If there's repentance involved, that's good. Maybe I'll have that gentle spirit. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 21. What do you want? Actually, let's start back in verse 19. I apologize. But I will come to you shortly, if the Lord wills, and I will know, not the word of those who are puffed up, but the power. For the kingdom of God is not in word, but in power. What do you want? Shall I come to you with a rod or in love and of a spirit of gentleness? So you know, here again, he's letting them make the choice. But the whole point is come to repentance. It's done out of love. And the preferred method, I believe, and what he wanted to do was to come with gentleness. He had a tremendous amount of love for the congregations, but his love was not just a mere blind sentiment. He was going to do whatever it took to help them, but he wanted to see them respond in a positive way, and he wanted to be a gentle individual. But as spirit beings, we think about our calling and moving forward. You know, our calling is to hopefully dwell with Christ, to help him rule in whatever capacity he has for us. And he wants us to learn things now. So we're in a training ground right now. So how does he want us to respond to things now? How does he want us to be as a spirit being? Have so much power, you know, to destroy a city or whatever because we're upset. What does he want for us to do? I mean, what if Jonah had the power to destroy Nineveh? What would he have done? He might have just wiped it out. What are we learning now? What is he trying to implement before so much power could be given? And when we think about the training that we are given right now, I guess you can think about maybe training a wild horse. You know, that horses have so much power and they can do so much, but there's something just beautiful about a trained horse has all that power, but is very proper and responds in such a beautiful way to have that restrained temperament or controlled. And you think about our training now, we're learning that and then have that power as well. If God grants that to us, it would be an amazing thing. Well, this is something that God would desire to see in fathers. This is also something he would desire to see in mothers as well. Gentleness, kindness. You know, I don't believe that all women were just born gentle. I believe that there's some passion there, and they also would need to have a gentleness of velvet and a firmness of steel. Otherwise, they'll get walked over as well by their children. So there does need to be that firmness, just needs to be that balance. Children require gentleness, a gentle voice, kind manners, soft expressions, along with that firmness to uphold righteous standards. Well, just like us and how God is training us, he is teaching us to be gentle. We also want to teach our children to be gentle. This starts at a young age. We would teach a child not to pull on a dog's tail or, you know, not grab them by the ears. And then we also teach them gentleness just in our example with one another. And that's going to be the greatest way to teach would be by example. So it's very important to teach our children to be gentle, to have gentle actions. And again, our actions will speak louder than words. But this is something that we are not only instilling with our children. This is something that God is teaching us right now and that he's wanting us to learn with all men and how we respond to all men. Two final scriptures to conclude. Titus 3 and verse 2. Titus 3 and verse 2, what we are learning right now, and this is a major part of our calling to learn this in this life. Titus 3 and verse 2, Titus 3 and verse 1, remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility with all men. Gentle and showing humility to all men. So what is part of our calling? What is God teaching us right now? Well, a major part of that is the gentleness and the meekness of Christ, to be more like Him, to walk as He walked. Our training is now, and if we can learn to be a gentle person, it will be a character that will be utilized for eternity. As we know, we're sowing things right now, and He's building character in us that will last for eternity. I thought that this was an interesting scripture, in 1 Peter 3 and verse 1 to conclude, because there's a certain characteristic trait, we might say, but yet it's referred to as being incorruptible. When we think about the character that we're putting on, and this is an incorruptible characteristic trait, we have that, because it will last for eternity and through eternity. 1 Peter 3, starting in verse 1. First Peter 3 and verse 1. Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. When they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Now, this is not just for the women, I believe. We all should be striving to have a gentle spirit, or this incorruptible trait that will last for eternity. A character that will withstand the heat and the agitations and the provoking, and that will be able to, by example, win people over. So let's all strive to put on the meekness and gentleness of Christ.